PUA TV သတင်းစီစဉ်ကကြိုဆိုပါရယ် PUA TV
各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。美国国务卿布林肯公布2021年国际宗教自由报告，批评中国继续针对维吾尔穆斯林和其他少数宗教族裔实施种族灭绝。今天的节目中我们一同关注。美国发布2021年度宗教自由报告，国务卿布林肯在公布报告时说，中国继续针对多数为穆斯林信徒的维吾尔人和其他少数宗教族裔实施种族灭绝与压制。另外，他也赞扬台湾提倡宗教自由的努力。详细情况请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅来介绍。耀毅。
在美国国务院在6月2号发布了2021年度的国际宗教自由报告。那么在发布会上呢，美国国务卿布林肯是严词的批评中国镇压境内的各种宗教的信徒。我们看一下布林肯国务卿怎么说。
Continues its genocide and repression of predominantly Muslim Uyghurs and other religious minority groups. Since April 2017, more than 1 million Uyghurs, ethnic Kazakhs, Kyrgyz and others,have been detained in internment camps in Xinjiang. PRC continues to harass adherents of other religions that it deems out of line with Chinese Communist Party doctrine, including by destroying Buddhist, Christian, Islamic, and Taoist houses of worship, and by erecting barriers to employment and housing for Christians, Muslims, Tibetan Buddhists, and Falun Gong practitioners.
那个美国的这个国际宗教自由报告呢，是在1998年在克林顿政府时期呢来开始进行的第一份报告，那么是来追踪包括有200个国家与地区的宗教自由。那么第一份的报告呢，是由刚刚在今年3月过世的，同时也是美国史上第一位女性国务卿这个 Albright 所来发布的。那么在今天的发布会上呢，美国国务院的国际宗教自由无任所大使 Rashid Hassan 则说呢，有太多的政府还在顽固的镇压自己的人民，毫不意外的，中华人民共和国就是当中一个鲜明的例子。那此外呢，布林肯国务卿也在发布会上赞扬了台湾在宗教自由上面的显著进展。我们看一下布林肯国务卿怎么说。
This year's report includes several countries where we see notable progress, thanks to the work of governments, civil society organizations, and citizens. For example, last year, the Kingdom of Morocco launched an initiative to renovate Jewish heritage sites, like synagogues and cemeteries.And to include Jewish history in the Moroccan public school curriculum. In Taiwan, authorities are making it easier to report employers who refuse to give their workers a weekly rest day in order to attend religious services. In Timor-Leste, the new president, Ramos Horta, recently pledged to defend the rights of all citizens, regardless of religious background. And in Iraq, national leaders welcomed Pope Francis for the first ever papal visit to the country.where he conducted Christian interfaith ceremonies in Baghdad, in Mosul, and in the Iraqi Kurdish region.
布林肯国务卿表示呢，宗教自由不只是一个基本人权，也是拜登政府的重要外交政策的优先事项。那美国政府会继续的与世界各国以及公民社会一同来捍卫这项权利。卡拉。
好的，感谢耀毅的连线报道。美国海关将从6月21日开始依法对来自中国新疆地区的商品实施进口禁令。2021年的12月，拜登总统签署了获得国会两党广泛支持的防止强迫维吾尔人劳动法。这部法律将全面禁止美国进口商从新疆地区或与该地区政府有关联的实体进口产品，除非他们能够提供明确且令人信服的证据，证明产品并非由强迫劳动制造。美国海关估计，执行这一禁令将使每年需要海关审查和执行的交易数量从不足100万大幅增加到超过1150万，相关执法人员的数量需要增加300个。美国政府周四表示，正试图封锁有关俄罗斯制裁规避措施。这些措施被包括俄罗斯总统普京在内的俄罗斯精英用来试图隐藏和转移资金，并匿名利用全球奢侈品资产。封锁目标包括一家游艇经纪公司、飞机、俄罗斯官员和其他与普京关系密切的人。目标游艇包括悬挂俄罗斯国旗的优雅号和悬挂开曼群岛国旗的奥林匹亚号，以及其他两艘由俄罗斯公司拥有的游艇。 白宫表示，实施新制裁是为了打击规避行为，并加强制裁，以加大执法力度，并增强对普京及其支持者的压力。美国网络电商巨头亚马逊周四宣布，将从即日起停止向中国的零售商供应亚马逊的电子阅读器 Kindle， 并且计划在明年关闭在中国的所有 Kindle 电子书店。Kindle 业务的退出是大型跨国企业陆续退出中国市场例子中的最新的一个。美国网络服务巨头雅虎在去年宣布退出中国，美国软件巨头微软公司也表示要关闭其在中国的职业社交平台领英。2016年，中国成为亚马逊电子读书器的最大市场，亚马逊在中国拥有10000多名雇员。今年的6月4日是中共武力镇压1989年北京天安门学生市民抗议运动33周年。这个纪念日到来的时机，也使得今年的纪念有着特殊的意义。下面我们连线美国之音驻纽约记者方冰，请他来介绍专家对此的分析。方冰你好。
卡拉你好。
嗯，方冰，其实今年的这个六四纪念日呢，并不是一个逢五或者逢十的主要纪念日，但是为什么说有特殊的意义呢？
是的，今年六四正值中国国家主席习近平坚持抗疫清零政策，导致民怨四起，经济大幅度下滑之际。那么与此同时呢，今年也是习近平当局在香港实行国安法，将这个全球30多年来保持着有规模纪念六四的空间被完全扼杀后的第一个六四纪念日。所以呢，在这样的时候纪念六四，它的意义是不同寻常的。卡拉。
是方冰，那么刚才你也说到这个现在在中国发生的一系列事件，那么这一系列的事件和当年33年前的六四事件有怎样的关系吗？
这个问题正是我采访三位专家请他们回答的问题。那么习近平在上海实行动态清零政策，动用军队和警察封城，无休止的核酸测试，破门消杀，强迫居民进入方舱等侵犯人权的行为，激起了民众的不满和反抗，并在高层形成了要求改变现状的压力。纽约大学法学院退休教授孔杰荣说，今年6月4号代表着在1980年代人们目睹的中国大陆为言论自由而进行的同样的斗争。我们来听孔杰荣教授怎么说。
The ferment in China todayAt both the elite level and the mass level, and especially the youth level of young people in their 20s and early 30s, suggests that there are pressures again being generated on the party to change its policies and to lighten its.totalitarian rule and to allow more freedom of expression and action and movement in China. So June 4th today to me、represents the last time in mainland China that people, not just students, but many laboring people and middle class peopletry to express their opposition and dissatisfaction, and it's a reminder of how they were crushed. And we've now seen that Hong Kong has been crushed in the same way, and、it's a sad、anniversary. So June 4th is a proper time to reflect.On the deteriorating situation in China and the need for a more responsive government than the government being led by Xi Jinping.
是方冰，那从八九六四至今啊，在过去这33年里，中国呢是发生了巨大的变化，特别是在经济上也是出现了快速的发展。那么，如何从一个历史的角度来看待当年的六四和当今的中国现实之间的关系呢？
是的，我采访了中共党史专家《晚年周恩来》一书的作者高文谦，他从这段历史当中找到了一条线索。 高文谦说，对中国当局来说，六四镇压最大的政治遗产是开启了暴力维稳的国家治理模式和把一切不稳定的因素消灭在萌芽状态的所谓底线思维。高文谦指出，习近平当政以后在许多方面否定了邓小平当年的政策，但是却全盘继承了邓小平六四镇压的暴力维稳模式和底线思维。高文谦认为，暴力革命敌对思维是共产党的基因和原罪，毛泽东、邓小平、习近平三代一脉相承，为了政治上的需要可以肆意剥夺人的所有基本权利。高文谦说，邓小平六四镇压其本质是随意剥夺人的生命权，习近平上台以后不久也表现出了这种反人类反文明的暴力基因和底线思维，在国内全面收紧社会舆论控制，709律师大抓捕，在新疆暴力维稳，暴力镇压香港的反送中运动，现在呢更有上海抗议动态清零政策所引发的大规模的人道灾难。高文谦指出，今年纪念六四的时代特征就是共产党残暴的本性已经被越来越多的人所认清，以至于所谓的润学大行其道，年轻人喊出了这是我们最后一代。卡拉，
是，而且当年的这个天安门民主运动提出的很重要的诉求之一啊，就是要求言论自由和新闻自由。那么这样的一个诉求和今天在中国发生的很多的像侵犯人权的事件有怎样的联系吗？您采访的专家怎么看？
北京之春荣誉主编胡平说，正是六四打断了整个80年代中国自由化民主化的浪潮，使得中国重新陷入了结束80年代非毛化削弱专制体制的趋势，然后重新强化了这个专制的统治。胡平认为，如果这个进程没有打断，如果中国实现了言论自由和新闻自由，那么像这次新冠疫情就有可能被消灭在萌芽状态，而不至于成为全球大流行。我们来听胡平怎么说。
他之所以能够成为全球大流行，那就是中国政府、中国当局在他2019年年底的时候知道武汉出现了不明原因的肺炎，他去压制那些这个所谓这个吹哨人，对李文亮这几个人还扣上他们是散布谣言，加以严惩，把这个事情就深深的压下去，就错过了把疫情扼杀在萌芽状态这么一个时间窗口。如果在当时人们知道了有这么个疫情，那么人们自然就会采取相应的行动啊，而在疫情爆发之初，那是最容易把它这个扼杀在萌芽状态的啊。所以你这么讲，这次我们这个围在全球这么场大灾难，那就和中国就没有言论自由、没有新闻自由有着直接的关系。
好的，感谢方斌带来的详细报道。中共33年来一直压制六四真相，前全运领袖周峰锁正在筹备在纽约建立六四纪念馆，他将多件藏品在自己位于新泽西的家中进行了预展，展品中包括报道赵子阳被软禁的报纸做成的艺术品，以及曾经安置在天安门广场的蓝色帐篷。
这张展品，我想它代表的就是被暴力试图消灭的一个历史的真实。那这里边呢是89、64的时候很多的报纸记录了当时的情况。那么就是我有时候就觉得艺术是非常神奇的，它不是一个抽象的人的任意的想象，它是非常具体真实，而且这是89年6月的时候的创作。另外一面就是非常多的钉子，你在这里能够看到非常暴力。回到刚才的，就是非常了不起的，就是艺术家在六四之后很短的时间这种创作，实际上就预示了 后来这33年啊，这个就这个政权，他不遗余力吧，每年把很多人，仅仅因为谈到六四就放到监狱里，用国家力量来维持一个谎言，啊，把真相要沉埋。另外，报纸呢，因为它有当年整个社会的气息扑面而来那种感觉。还有一点很神奇的，就是尽管经过这么多年这样的这种各种灾害哈，啊，那它其实这些报纸上面的字还很清楚，这是很明显的写的赵子阳遭软禁。这是非常珍贵的一个帐篷，尽管看着很新哈，啊，好像今天还可以用，但是它其实是30多年前，就是从天安门广场在6月4日，军队进入天安门广场那个时刻，专门带出来的，保护了这么多年，在前几年捐献给人道中国。这是西安的一个大学里边的一对学生情侣，啊，当时他们带出来的，后来他们两个人，啊，都因为参加89民运啊，遭受迫害坐牢。我以前就记到过，就是这种蓝色的小帐篷。那么这种帐篷呢，是在5月30日的时候，由香港捐到天安门广场的学生手里。而这个帐篷本身呢，当时的位置是在民主女神像和国旗之间。民主女神像是正对着毛像，那么它是在这个国旗和民主女神像之间，所以这个帐篷在天安门广场用了5天。
欢迎继续收看《美国观察》。记者保护协会的报告指出，中国监禁的记者人数世界第一，全球293名入狱的记者中，50名被关押在中国，当中有22名是来自新疆的维吾尔记者。记者保护协会亚洲项目协调员白乐维对美国之音说，中国的新闻自由在20大前还会继续恶化。
According to CPJ's report, as you mentioned, there are 50 journalists imprisoned in China, and 22 of them are Uyghur. Why do we see such a higher percentage of Uyghur journalists being targeted by the Chinese government?
Yes, I mean, China, the Chinese Communist Party has been very sensitive about allowing the Uyghur population to establish a separate identity that's different from the Han Chinese identity. And they're very concerned about the, you know, possible influence of Islam on people's thinking. And the imprisonment of journalists in Xinjiang, who are Uyghur, simply reflects that broader trend. It's, some of the imprisonments are very difficult to understand. I mean, these are people who, some of them were Communist Party members, and some of them, you know, appeared to be very loyal to the government. But the government has accused many of them of what they call being two-faced. In other words, openly supporting the party, but secretly opposing its rule. So I think the higher, as I said, the greater imprisonment of Uyghur journalists simply reflects the Communist Party policy toward the Uyghur minority.
The Chinese Communist Party is going to hold the 28th Party Congress later this year. Do you expect to see press freedom in China keep deteriorating because of that? Why and what kind of information will Xi Jinping want to silence?
Well, it's clear that Xi Jinping and his government are trying to prevent open criticism of the Communist Party policies or open criticism of the president himself. And I think in the run-up to the Party Congress, this is going to become even more severe. I think everyone realizes now that China's zero COVID policy has been a failure in many ways. Early on, it would seem to be quite successful, but with these highly contagious variants, it's clear that the government has to take extraordinary measures that are really counterproductive in order to enforce this. And yet no one can openly say this in China, because that would involve a challenge to the Chinese president. So I think we're going to see more and more controls. Can we hope for something better after the Congress? It's very difficult to envision this. It's been a hallmark of Xi Jinping's regime and his rule that information controls have become tighter and tighter over time.
What do you think are the reasons Beijing ramped up efforts cracking down tech and financial influencers recently?
I think what we've seen in China is that the government wants to attack any independent source of authority or power, and this includes the leaders of the tech companies. It suggests that China simply doesn't want any dissident opinions or even friendly challenges to what it is doing. Because after all, these executives were not openly challenging communist rule, but they may have been expressing opinions that were not authorized or endorsed by the Communist Party. So I think what we're seeing is a continuing level of crackdown on any independent source of authority or power.
If the information about the real numbers of cases and seriousness of the pandemic in China continues not to be circulated, what would the scenario be, especially for the rest of the world?
Well, first of all, we have no idea about the accuracy of those figures. We all suspect that they are not fully reported, either the number of cases, you know, or the deaths. Now, there are a number of implications for the rest of the world. But I think the first is that as long as China continues this policy of severe lockdowns, then it's going to affect the economy. And when the Chinese economy doesn't grow, it does have a global impact. That's I think, the most significant. We have to wonder about Chinese policies, for example, about not using imported vaccines, which have proven to be more effective. I think the Chinese are now trying to step up the vaccination of the older population, which was lagging behind, and that's certainly a good move. When China is able to have some degree of control over the pandemic, then we can expect the impact on the economy to lessen. But this seems to be politically difficult because people cannot openly criticize the zero COVID policy since this is so associated with President Xi Jinping. And of course, the formal press is not able to report these views.
How about China's propaganda? Let's take Russia's invasion in Ukraine as example. How widely circulated are they, and what are the impacts both domestically and internationally?
Well, I think the Chinese propaganda effort at home, it appears to be quite successful. Of course, we don't know for sure because we're not able to conduct, you know, open polling in China. But we do see signs that the Chinese have jumped on this nationalist bandwagon to support the government view. China's in a rather difficult situation because it did have diplomatic relations with Ukraine. It was an independent sovereign state, was a member of the United Nations, and it has been one of China's longstanding policies to support the sovereignty of independent countries. And I think that their public position on this is rather strained. But we do see the Chinese Communist Party encouraging these strong nationalist feelings at home. And as far as we know, this has been fairly successful.
John Lee, Hong Kong's sole executive candidate, said that there is no need to defend press freedom because it exists in Hong Kong. How would you respond to this? He added that press freedom needs to fulfill requirements of the law. However, laws in Hong Kong are now seen problematic to many other countries. How do you see the press environment in Hong Kong now? Is there any major differences in this regard when compared with cities in mainland China?
Hong Kong is still obviously more free in terms of the press than mainland China. I think that continues to be true. At the same time, we have seen a series of actions against prominent journalists, including Jimmy Lai and much of the senior staff of the Apple Daily and the Next Digital Group, who are in jail now. That sent a terrible signal. We've seen the arrests at Stan News. Stan News was forced to close down. And in response to that, other publications, for example, Citizen News, they voluntarily closed because they could no longer feel confident that the reporting they did would be acceptable under the law. And now we've seen at the Hong Kong, the Foreign Correspondents Club, they have suspended their annual Human Rights Award because we understand they were going to give that award to journalists at Stan News, and they determined that it put the club potentially in legal jeopardy with a national security law. So I think the claim that there is press freedom in Hong Kong is simply not true. Now, it's simply not the way it was before. The Apple Daily was a highly critical voice of the Communist Party and was pro-democracy. Their voice was completely silenced. And we've seen almost all the independent press, not all of it, but almost all, closed in Hong Kong, either forced to be closed or self-closed, or closed by their own decision. And so I think overall, you cannot claim that Hong Kong has press freedom. Now, once you say you have press freedom, but they have to comply with the laws, and those laws potentially put people in jail for what the government thinks is false news or what the government claims are opinions that oppose the national security law, then that's a contradiction. You cannot have press freedom, you know, under those circumstances.
今年三月的一个寒冷的夜晚，俄罗斯圣彼得堡米哈伊洛夫斯基剧院的两名常驻芭蕾舞演员挥泪离开俄罗斯，通过荒凉的界桥前往爱沙尼亚，以示对俄罗斯对乌克兰侵犯的抗议。
So we've been living in St. Petersburg, Russia for the last 7 years, performing there at the Mikhailovsky Theater.
For me, it was always my dream. Like, since I studied in Slovakia. I always was fascinated by Russian language, and I always wanted to dance in Russia.
We woke up one day to find out that there had been an invasion of Ukraine. And because of this, we decided to leave. And then we took a car to the border of Russia and Estonia and walked across the bridge. I had to give an interview with the secret police, which is called the FSB.
He purposely spoke bad Russian because his Russian is pretty good.
It was intense. You know, I was not sure what would have happened had I not answered correctly, but it was definitely a scary moment, especially because we were so close to getting out at that point. We're not vocal until we left Russia. Many people that had been vocal were getting knocks on the door or phone calls or being told by their employers that they couldn't do that. But as soon as I crossed the border, I think within 2 hours I was posting and writing about it, we condemned it.
Most of our friends international, they left, and I don't think they will come back soon.
Russian ballet is definitely going to be totally isolated. Yeah, exactly. Isolated from the West. We had a difficult situation, but what's happening to the people of Ukraine is just the most tragic, terrible thing I could imagine.
Nothing moves.
So. 以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容。感谢您的收看，我们下次再见。